Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Sketch Reporters Assemble!
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello. You heard it. The Sports Reporters have indeed assembled because it is Friday afternoon, and I am joined, as I am every Friday afternoon on this very podcast, by my good friend up there in Detroit, Michigan, of the Detroit Free Press, Andrew Hammond. Andrew, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. How you doing, sir?
Not too bad. It's not raining at the moment. It's been raining all week. I don't know what the weather's been like in your neck of the woods.
It rained here like yesterday evening and part of today, but the sun's kind of trying to peek out right now. So I don't know. It'll probably rain a few more times before midnight.
Yeah, same here. Also here, from the Daily Beast, my good friend, Robert Silverman. Bob, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I just came with a wave of nausea. I don't know what it is. I just ate I had some brie on some bread for lunch, and now suddenly I just get hit with that, you know, that like when those cascading waves of feeling unpleasantness just sort of start rolling over you. I don't know if it's because I'm hearing your voice or it's the brie, but it could be either.
Generally, I get those feelings when I'm watching my football team on Sundays.
Which is your team, Andrew?
The Minnesota Vikings. I hate everything about this team too. I hate the coaches. I hate the quarterback. I hate that the best offensive player on the field, or the most important offensive player on the field, is basically just pretty much breaking down in front of us, and I hate it all. And other than that, everything's fine.
Is Dalvin Cook washed now? Is that what we're saying?
He's not, but you can definitely, because you see it in running backs all the time. And you start to see them pick up injuries, and the bounce back isn't as good as you think, or isn't as comfortable as you think. And you
something
know,
ineffable is lost with each minor tweak.
Right, and then they kind of start to pile up a little bit, and the gaps between injuries get much shorter. Yeah, not fun. And it happens to
Madison, though. Madison's a quality backup.
He is, but the issue is you still have the guy who hands the ball off to him. I don't like him.
Because he's not big.
He's a top 10 in quarterback rating at the moment, actually. Kirk Cousins is like one of the best graded Vikings this year.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, like if you took away the name, and you just put, you know, whatever quarterback.
It's a great quarterback name.
It's a great quarterback name, but he stinks.
Captain Kirk, that's a solid nickname. You can just slide that right in there. He has 3 to 4 games a year where he looks like a Hall of Famer, and the rest of the time he's utterly, utterly mediocre.
And you know what the amazing thing about Kirk Cousins is, and I will get this thing back on track, which I kind of enjoy about our podcast, is that one of us will completely sidetrack it, then we kind of center back. But
you were due for it. Bob's been doing it as of late. Yeah, it was time for you to take the ticket.
Here's a strong Kirk Cousins take.
here's the amazing thing about Kirk Cousins' career. Kirk Cousins' career basically exists because the former owner and coach of the Washington franchise were so split on
ruining Robert Griffin's career.
They were so
Shanahan freaking broke him, and then the owner got a bit of a crush on Captain Kirk, and that's why
And that's the amazing thing is that basically they were picked in this. I believe they were picked in the same draft,
And that's when DC traded up to get Griffin third, and then they went and took Cousins out of Michigan State in the
because it was just anyway. Like, hey, one of basically it was like
they're out of following spite. Their board. They are remaining faithful to their belief in their draft board. You have to give them credit for that.
So I just want to say that I appreciate the fact that basically the Washington franchise and the Washington, leadership decided to basically just spite each other and draft this dude, and now Minnesota decided, oh, you know what? We're going to pay for him. And now I'm unhappy on Sunday.
Who was Minnesota's quarterback before Cousins?
It was Case Keenum. But here's the thing about Case Keenum. It was like, yeah, he's a bridge to some – he was clearly a bridge. But he's a bridge to somewhere, but we don't know where. And then they just decided to
leave it in what's his name? Joe, the running quarterback who they would bring in occasionally to spell Keenum.
Joe Webb.
Joe Webb. No.
Was Spurgeon Wynn ever a Viking?
He was mid-2000s. He was like post it was post Moss pre Yeah, it was pre-Favre. I know that, but I do know that it was like during the party boat years.
Was he
15-year anniversary of that, by the way. So happy anniversary!
There you go. I was always more of a Gus Frerotte guy myself. Big Gus Frerotte guy over here.
God, Gus Frerotte basically just headbutting himself into a wall is still art.
So who then is the best Vikings quarterback?
All time?
Randall Cunningham.
Oh, no, the last, like, 20 years.
Randall Cunningham.
I would go Dante Culpepper.
I guess Cunningham's probably. Not the last 20, right? He's, like, 25?
No, Cunningham.
Yeah, it would be Culpepper.
No, it'd be Favre, right? No, the answer is Favre here.
No.
It's Favre.
Yeah, 1 year.
No.
I think that was their best year, though.
No.
I think the answer is Favre.
It's still Culpepper.
I don't think it's Culpepper.
I'm still taking Culpepper.
Actually, it might be. It might be Sam Bradford.
Here's the thing with Favre, though.
Mm-hmm.
Favre basically operated out of giving the middle finger to the Packers.
Mm.
And it works, but when you decide to throw an interception at the worst possible time in the most Vikings way possible... Yeah,
you had fun that year. Don't lie to me. You loved the Favre year.
I had about 12 games of quality of Brett Favre experience with the Jets, and meanwhile he was, sending.
Did they make the playoffs?
No, they didn't. They crashed and burned. They started out at 8-4.
Yeah, that's Favre right.
Then Favre hurt his shoulder, and they went 1-3 down the stretch. And
they also had those navy blue and gold uniforms or whatever. Remember that year?
Oh, the Titans. The AFL.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Those were awful.
I kind of liked them.
Oh, no. No.
One for okay.
No.
They kept those throwbacks going for years. Sanchez wore both the home and the road version.
I was kind of upset about? They never wore like the jet green 1968 uniforms.
They did. Don't get me into Jets throwback history. In 94, when they did the 75th anniversary uniforms, this is while the Jets were still wearing the Kelly green and black former size uniforms. They did, as part of that year, wear the Kelly green Namath Jets uniforms.
Yeah.
But the problem is, for some reason, they couldn't figure out how to order white helmets. And so they just had the green. They had the green helmets with the green logo. So they just looked awful. And 4 years later, if you have a Johnny Johnson starter jersey somewhere, it may look like that. But 4 years later, they went back to a. Parcells, by the way, was the one who insisted that they go back.
Okay.
Parcells was the one who did it. And there's a quote from George Seifert. Someone on the Niners. The Jets played the Niners in the opening game that year. They lost on
Garrison Hurst. Yeah, Garrison Hurst.
Long touchdown. And Glenn Foley was still starting. This is before Tess.
Fuck Glenn Foley, by the way.
Wow. That's the strongest opinion I think I've ever heard about Glenn Foley.
So Glenn Foley played at Boston College in 93. Boston College beat Notre Dame. I cried like as a 4-year-old. I was like bawling. So you know what? Fuck Glenn Foley.
In any case, Foley comes out to start the Niners Jets game in the opening game that year. And I think it was Seifert who said, like, when he saw him, he was shocked. He was like, "What the hell is that?" He's like, "Who is that? Is that Namath walking out there?" They were very surprised. But the way that they messed those up is that they went from Kelly Green to Green Bay Packers Forest Green, and it just became a very drab uniform. Because if your only color is green and white, the green needs to really pop.
Right.
And so the whole thing. And they kept that look. And the other problem is they have these, you know, ornate sleeve stripes, which just don't work on a modern uniform because nobody's sleeves are long enough to create a full circle. So nobody can really wear attractive and well-designed shoulder sleeves in football anymore.
Mm. Well, don't forget, folks, you can listen to Bob.
Discontinued stripes are bad. It is poor design.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the NBA has instituted, because they're part of the Nike template, uniform discontinued stripes, I find it's insulting, frankly.
Mm. Well, couldn't relate.
Offensive.
My team's
offensive to my sensibilities as a fine artist.
The Atlanta Braves, the Atlanta Hawks.
You want to talk about the Tennessee Titans Halloween candy uniform?
Tennessee now? Titans, the Tennessee Volunteers,
whatever.
Sir. If you're going to make your way down to Knoxville in the future, Bob, you gotta know what you're talking about here.
Gonna happen.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's gonna be great. Andrew, you got to be here for this too.
Go Vols.
I'm very excited about like Bob's experience because like I've been to Neyland for a Tennessee Florida game.
Mm.
Fantastic. Like I feel like Bob needs to get a big game in Knoxville experience.
I have gone to kickboxing matches. In Bangkok, okay? So I have seen some wild sports. Let me tell you something. You go to sort of a really janky quasi-underground kickboxing match in Bangkok. The first thing is the concessions are surpass anything you'll get anywhere in the United States. And they're quite pricey.
Because they kill the animals right there, right?
Wow, racist.
I'm like dead serious. Like it's
no,
like, it's not.
It's just Thai street food, man. It's like tiny sausages, sticky rice. You can get a little newspaper filled with pad Thai if you want. It's all amazing.
Oh, that actually sounds bomb. No, and I wasn't like trying to be racist, Bob.
But in any case,
because you know you've been to a game in America, you know how prepackaged our bullshit is.
Right, I'm just telling you, for like 10 baht, which is a quarter, you can get an outstanding meal at a Thai kickboxing match. The only problem is, the first thing is you walk in, and it's like, you know, it's the ring is set up in the middle of like a bar. So you're in a bar and everyone's milling around. And what you realize when you're sort of checking out, you realize you haven't bought for the expensive seats, which I think were a dollar or 40 Thai baht. But we stayed in the SRO seats. Because the seats up front, this wasn't an arena or anything, it maybe sat, you know, 100 people. So we're just like, we'll be in the bar and we'll watch. And the first two rows, they all have plastic stretched out all over them. And we're like, what the hell is the plastic for? Are those special seats or what's going on? And then the match starts and these two guys, we were not watching heavyweights fight. These were 500 pound soaking wet guys. And the thing is, the plastic is when the blood splatters out of the ring onto the front row. And like Gallagher, everyone has to pick the plastic up quickly to keep from getting splattered.
Jesus.
So yeah, I'm ready for whatever Knoxville has to offer us.
It's Coliseum. It's going to be great.
Chase, what SEC venue would Bob feel most afraid at?
Oh, that's easy.
Is it LSU?
No.
Oh, no. I think I know what you... College Station.
No, not College Station. No.
Guys, I'm talking about like Gallagher-like plastic sheets. I feel like I can handle anything.
No, it's just very different. Like, it's...
I want to put you in the most uncomfortable... SEC.
It's Ole Miss, by the way. It's the Grove. Through the Grove is a different situation entirely.
I can handle Starkville, man. I can handle that.
It's not Starkville. See, you're already off to a bad start. That's not Mississippi State's a different program.
No. So he would be fine. He would be fine at Ole Miss.
You think so?
I feel like he would be fine at Ole Miss.
Okay.
We take him to like a midnight yell in College Station.
Okay.
Hilarious.
Because I mean, Nealon's a different breed. Like Bob's gonna ask. He's gonna hit me like four times. Like, are they doing Rocky Top just every 45 seconds?
I'm not gonna do that. I can blend in, man. I will follow the Anthony Bourdain lesson plan and just, you know, experience and enjoy and celebrate the locals. I'm not gonna wear like a corduroy jacket with.
This is my friend Paddington.
Bob, I need you in College Station for a midnight yell Texas A&M weekend. Mm. Like, no, I feel like that's where it would be the most. Is this a cult?
Mm-hmm.
Like you would be asking that several times. Is this a cult? Yes, it is.
Well, I've got some NBA questions for you guys.
Sure.
But before we get there.
Speaking of cults,
the NBA and people who want to get canceled really bad, who used to cover the NBA and may not, but they really, really want to get canceled so that.
I know who you're talking about. Shit. Fuck.
Language.
We will not divulge because I don't want to give that said person a. I don't want to give a platform to said person. But don't forget, folks, you can follow Bob on twitter.com @BobSaeta. Go subscribe to the Daily Beast if you have not already. Support the good journalism over there. Also support the good journalism at the Detroit Free Press. So go subscribe and check out the Detroit Free Press if you have not already. Follow Andrew at AHAM Free Press. Go to ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. If you like listening to Andrew and Bob. And myself every Friday. Make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you are an Apple Podcast listener. Helps more than you know. And lastly, make sure to subscribe on sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com right in there every day. Go again, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. NBA questions for you guys. I have one Western Conference question and one Miami Heat question because I've been going back and forth. The NBA is almost here. We have a good feeling for a lot of different teams in the league. I'm exhausted just talking about the Ben Simmons, Kyrie stuff, the Andrew Wiggins stuff.
You know what's going to be good? The New York Knickerbockers, baby!
Not a playoff team. And then...
He's going to be so disappointed.
He really is. I don't think he knows what's coming.
They are the Georgia football fans of the NBA.
Mm.
I watched one preseason game, and Kemba Walker...
Oh, buddy.
I don't know if you know this, but...
Are you in a tunnel now, Bob? It sounds like you're walking farther and farther away from your microphone as you're talking about Kemba Walker.
Well, yeah, I am a little.
There you are. Okay.
There's a fan on me.
Okay.
Because of the light nausea that I'm experiencing from possibly a cheese sandwich or Chase Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of those three or all the above.
Okay. But my two questions, will the Warriors challenge for a top four seed in the West, and will the Miami Heat challenge for a top four seed in the East? I've watched one Heat preseason game when they played the Hawks, watched a little bit of the Warriors. I've gone back and forth on this Jordan Poole. A lot of people are buying some Jordan Poole stock right now. What do you think?
Sports writers who went to Michigan, or
hey, well, that's a lot of them. That's a lot of them. Okay. Were there more sports writers who went to Michigan or Northwestern?
We're not going to get into the whole Medill journalism school.
Dialogue. As a Medill grad,
yeah, we're not going to do that.
Wait, Jordan who's a Medill grad here?
Jordan Poole could have a very nice scoring guard off the bench type career. Jordan Poole is very. He's like Jamal Crawford or another Jordan Parks.
Jordan Crawford, for that matter. Former Warrior Jordan Crawford. Xavier legend.
Exactly.
Oh, was that a pun? Did you exactly there on purpose?
So you want to know about the light years ahead Golden State Warriors.
And the Miami Heat. I want to get your perspective. Which do you think is more likely?
The Miami Heat. Miami Heat are going to be, they're going to be good again. They're very, they're a little top heavy. I worry about the bench depth, but it's Spoelstra. As NBA coaches go, Spoelstra might rank as one of the more underrated ones. Like, nobody mentions him in terms of, okay, here are the top five NBA coaches. You'll hear about.
Wait, who doesn't do that? Everyone does that.
No, Spoelstra doesn't make it.
Did he not just get like a preseason coach of the year stuff? He's absolutely regarded as a top five coach.
Generally, he's not the first. I guarantee you. Brad Stevens' coaching acumen gets talked up a lot more than Spoelstra's.
So, I will agree with Bob there. But if 2020 basically had me saying, okay, yeah, Spo is a Hall of Fame coach. Like, he's there.
Well, he's already done it. The thing that makes him immediate Hall of Fame is he did it with the Big Three, and he did it with a bunch of collection of guys around Jimmy Butler. Like, the fact that he's shown that he can win with nothing and then win with everything. I mean, that's
just his consistency. Mm-hmm. His consistency and team building. And yes, Pat Riley has a lot to do with that. But guess what? You've got to coach those guys, because as we've seen, there are franchises who just really suck at that.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I can't name any.
Andrew, what do you think?
I'm extremely high on the Heat.
Okay.
I've got them in the NBA Finals.
Oh.
And here's the thing. People might take it as a hot take. Mm-hmm. Is it a hot take if I'm looking around the East and I'm like, okay, it's difficult to repeat. It is. The East is more wide open, I would say.
Well, nobody knows what's going to happen. No one knows if Kyrie's going to play.
It's more wide open 1 through, I'd say, 6. And I'm not saying that,
I think, if Kyrie just buckles and gets the jab, I think the Nets are going to run away with it. Right now, though, we just don't know. I mean, and it's going to... The Bucks are going to be extremely good again. If Philly can figure out what to do with their sad Australian man, I think they'll be really good again. And then Miami. Those are the top four teams, full stop.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. And I think that there are avenues, because I agree with Bob. I think those four, but after that, four in terms of, I'd say, five, six, seven, are much closer to four this year than they were a year ago. So
say their name. The Atlanta Hawks can win the East this year.
The Atlanta Hawks could absolutely win the East this year.
Yeah, no, like there are seven teams where I would say, yeah, there's a path. Like they could reach the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure.
They just did.
I'm saying they are a team. I'll throw another team out there, the Chicago Bulls.
Oh no, we're not now.
I'm not saying that they will. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that there is a path for some teams to.
What Andrew is saying is, in a relatively self-contained universe with infinite possible probabilities, one of those probabilities is that the Chicago Bears are not fucked. And yeah, you can't deny that.
Mm. I think the Bulls will be a playoff team. I don't know. I don't see the upside of them really coalescing into a team that could challenge the Bucks, the Nets, the Heat, or the Hawks in a seven-game series. Even the Sixers, really.
Yeah, no, here, and this is why, because I think that you're going to see perhaps the most improved division is going to be the Central.
Well, let me stop you right there. Do we know who's in any divisions in the NBA anymore? Because now I'm going to have to look up who is in the Central.
Pistons.
The Pacers.
Pistons, Pacers, Bulls.
Cavs.
So, like...
the Bucks,
there is something I like to call the East tax, which is if you look at some of these teams in the East, boy, are they bad. So you can pad a few wins on
who are the really bad.
I was going to say, I think the East is actually deeper than the West this year.
Yeah, the Pistons are going to be.
Oh, no, the Pistons are good. No, I'm not saying that the Pistons are bad. I do think some teams are going to regress, though.
Mm. Like who? Whom's? Name names, man.
I am going to. As much as we like this team last year, the Hornets.
Mm. I think they're going to be better.
They're gonna be fun.
LaMelo
will be better. They'll have Hayward all year. Like Book Knight was a good pick. I think they're gonna they're not gonna get much past 500, but they're gonna be a league pass favorite again.
I do have a question for you guys, and I ask this because it feels like we're seeing in various leagues and in various sports that there is maybe a 2020 kind of, I'm not saying there's an asterisk because there's not, but do you think that having a full off season, a normal quote unquote off season for some of these guys and a majority of these teams helps maybe change things? Cause I remember thinking about this.
Maybe. I mean, the Knicks definitely got helped by the fact that that Tibbs kept everyone pretty much
absolutely.
In a bunker and was just like, listen, I know some teams are figuring it out and mailing it in. We're just going to go pedal to the metal all the time. That absolutely helped. I mean, the fun thing that I thought that I was thinking of the other night, and I mentioned this while I was doing my dork fantasy basketball draft.
Nerd!
Yeah, right, exactly, is... The Lakers won the 2020 title a year ago.
Yeah.
Just 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to think, hey, remember when the Lakers won the title? It seems a lot longer than that.
It does.
Well, there's been a lot of basketball.
For me, I think LeBron is not... If LeBron plays more than 50 games, I'll be very surprised.
Well, it's good that you say that, because this is why I have just crossed off the Lakers as a title team, is that, like, we saw this last year where...
Because they built a bad team!
Well, it's not even just that. It's more... Okay, so the thing with the Lakers is that... So, do y'all remember the conversations that people were having about, like, oh, the West could have...
Not a bad team. I don't think it's the ideal roster that to build around... LeBron, who needs to pace himself, and Anthony Davis. I think
Westbrook helps in the regular season. I just don't see how this works in the postseason. I think he helps LeBron missing 30 games, but then you look at the numbers and the Wizards were significantly worse when Beal missed time and Westbrook was leading the show. So it's not like you just exit LeBron and Westbrook and Davis are just going to kill it. Like, I don't think that's a guarantee
LeBron
either.
Westbrook is... this is difficult because, like, Westbrook at his peak was so much freaking fun. I love Russell Westbrook, even though he is just he doesn't have a lot of smooth edges, but he is absolutely was a joy to watch during those Oklahoma City years. But I don't think he helps a team win even in the regular season. I feel like he accumulates a lot of stats, so there's that, but. Yeah,
I mean, the Wizards are going to be better without him. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie is
the long thing in The Athletic, I think it was, about how the Westbrook basically recruited himself to the Lakers. There's a good story. I think it's The Athletic, which has a TikTok of that, like, Buddy Hield basically thought, oh, this is a done deal. And then Russell did some scheming and managed to convince everyone to sort of put the kibosh on the Buddy Hield trade. And Buddy Hield is not a better player than Russell Westbrook, but Buddy Hield absolutely would fits better on this iteration of the Lakers.
I would agree. Any someone who can play in their closing five in a big time playoff series, I don't think Westbrook can. I really don't think this is going to go well come postseason. I also just think they have to make a top four seed. Like, that was what I was getting at. It's just that, like, the Lakers were a 7 seed last year. Injuries derailed their season. I think that's partly going to happen again, even Adam with a full offseason for AD.
Adam Silver also derailed their season.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it too. But the broader point, LeBron's 37. LeBron's going to miss time. He's had two of three injury-riddled years now. They're asking a lot of Malik Monk, Talen Horton-Tucker, guys like that. And I think you have to be a top four seed to run that Western Conference gauntlet, to have the home court. And what happened against Phoenix, I don't know if it happens if the roles are reversed and they're the two seed and the Suns are the seven seed.
So who are the top four seeds?
Phoenix, I think it's the Jazz, the Nuggets.
Depending on how quickly Murray comes back.
I even think without him, I think Jokic and Porter in that group, they're so deep. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, Porter could take a leap.
And yes. So I think those two for sure I would lock in. The Jazz, I think, are going to have the best record in the NBA this year, is my guess. Getting Conley back, I like the Rudy Gay signing. They're deep. They're going to play nine guys that are just going to play efficient. Very difficult. The Suns, I think, will still be a top four seed. They bring everyone back.
I thought it was weird when the Jazz hired Ben Mendelsohn from the third Batman movie to coach the team, but it's worked out really well for them.
And then I think the wild card is either the Warriors or the Clippers as the four seed. I think the Warriors are going to be right there.
Well, I just don't know. I mean, the Clippers looked great when Reggie Jackson suddenly decided he was a superstar point guard during the playoffs last year. Does he do that all regular season? Are they okay? Will we get an entire year of really good Paul George, which never has really happened?
That's why you draft Terrence Mann to step up when you need
Terrence
him.
Terrence Mann is going to silence the haters. That's what I've seen from his posts.
You love a guy who can silence the haters, though.
Yeah, they've got a deep team. They'll be like Tyronn Lue, also an incredibly underrated and good NBA coach.
Yes,
they'll be very good. There's just a lot of any team. Look, if you told me that I think Phoenix is clearly the best team in the West to me. Whether or not they win the most games is a question, but to me, they're the best team in the West. I personally believe that this is the year that DeAndre Ayton actually makes a jump and becomes a real offensive hub for them.
So he gets that contract?
Yeah, he wants that cheddar.
I don't max out Ayton until I see something different. Like, if he stays rim-running big, I'm not giving him the max. But we'll see. He might have more to his game. So I want to see it before I do that.
He's clearly got the skills. I mean, I think it was actually really smart, because in that first year, he looked like an empty stats 2010 center. Not to say that 2010 is anything to shake a stick at. But his rookie year, you thought, okay, he will score and grab rebounds for bad teams. To Phoenix's credit, what they said to him is, okay, concentrate on these two things. You're going to protect the rim, and you're going to snag every single possible rebound, and we will get you garbage time points. But he absolutely has the skill set to be a dump the ball to him in the post when there's no other bucket available and go get some kind of a player. Whether it happens this year or not, I really do believe Ayton is that good. The only thing that's confusing is he's got a bit of a Greg Oden face thing where he looks like he's already 38 years old, even though he's 24. It's very disconcerting to me that that's a 24-year-old.
I have some breaking news for you guys on some NBA stuff, too. You ready for this?
Yeah.
From Zach Lowe. Some court design news per sources, because I'm a sucker for that. Mavs plan to unveil a new court that has the names of every player who has ever played at least one game for the franchise, which includes 337 players into the baselines and sidelines. Eduardo Nájera, he's back.
So the Mavs have decided to go with all in on remembering some guys.
Yes, they have. David Roth is now running the marketing department.
We're going to go with Marquise Daniels.
Auburn legend Marquise Daniels.
Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman. We're going to hang it. Guys, we are going to remember Dale Ellis and Jammin' James Donaldson. We're going to remember Brad Davis, for that matter.
Shad Bradley?
We're going to remember Popeye Jones.
hey, Popeye Jones, who has two kids. Solid
Popeye
hockey
Jones
player.
Had sex. That is now a fact that Popeye Jones is not a virgin.
That is now canon in the Chase Thomas podcast.
It's lore. Popeye Jones not a virgin.
Popeye Jones had sex.
Everyone knows this. No one can deny it. I just want to remember some more Mavs. Sam Cassell, briefly a Mav.
Was Cassell really a Mav? Yep.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he got traded for Kidd when Phoenix.
So the
Rockets traded him to Phoenix, and Phoenix traded him to the Mavs, and the Mavs traded him to the Nets, where he had those couple of good years there. Hmm. He was traded for Robert Pack. We're remembering Robert Pack.
Bob, do you remember when, and Chase might be a little too young for this, sorry, Chase, but like when Cuban first got the Mavericks? Like, I'd say from maybe 97, 98 to about 2004, I'm just going to get some guys. Like, that's all
He traded everybody. He ran through so many different players there because, you know, look, the team got good for two reasons. One, because they made that trade, trading Dirk for Robert Trailer, and then they traded for Nash, and that was the one that paid off. That really got them. And then they traded for Finley also, part of the Kidd trade. I think it was Finley and Cassell for Jason Kidd, and that's how they built the team. But he was really doing like the Trader Phil Esposito thing of just dealing guys. Sean Bradley was involved in those trades. There was a lot.
And what was so funny about it is, it literally was. If you were to look at the rosters, like, and that's like my first thought when Chase was saying, oh yeah, they're gonna add, you know, every person's name who played on the Mavericks at least one game, and I'm just like, so they're basically just doing the whole the first 4 or 5 years of Mark Cuban's run as owner, because
Nelly was still the GM then.
But that was peak. Remember some guys for that team.
They definitely went through, like, Rodman played there for, I think, like 15 games or something like that.
There's a fantastic story. I want to say it was either Page Two or The Ringer that did a kind of a deep dive into, or no, oral history of his time with the Mavericks and how Cuban was like, oh yeah, this is a great idea. And
it was probably when the Rodman documentary came out a couple of years ago, and a lot of people
were writing Rodman. Because I want to say it was either Dale Harris. Dale Harris was like, I do not want this.
My another strongly held belief that I have about the Mavericks is they really need to go back to the blue and green Western font.
They really do.
Have you seen the mishmash NBA throwbacks that they're wearing this year? It's sort of like it, but
What are they doing?
So they're doing like
every. What they're taking is every NBA team this year, in lieu of, I believe, the City Edition uniform, is going to get a special uniform that grabs various elements from uniforms in the past.
Mm. I love the Sixers one, by the way.
The Sixers one with the Spectrum side, that's really nice. They got the Art Deco font. It's very nice. If you guys want to Google sportslogos.net, they'll have some photos of them. Or if you really want to get deep into NBA uniform, I suggest you follow the Twitter account Camisas de la NBA. Somehow this guy gets people to take pictures of uniforms when they show up at a motel and send them to him. So he will break as much NBA uniform news as anybody on the planet.
It's actually impressive.
NBA Uniform Tracker is also a quality follow if you're, again, a complete sicko like me who's into this stuff.
Same.
But in it, TLDR, so what they're doing, so you will take, like the Lakers, for example, have a Forum Blue purple uniform, but it also has the light blue drop shadow from the first couple of years in Los Angeles when they wore navy blue, or, you know, royal blue and light blue. So it is a purple and light blue uniform, and it's also got the two stars on the side from when they were the Minneapolis Lakers. That is one combination. The Sixers, as Andrew mentioned, has the Art Deco font that they very briefly wore in the early 1970s on a navy uniform, which is kind of odd because the Sixers have never really worn navy blue. They've always gone with royal blue. But the cool part is on the sides, they have, again, Chase, probably too young to remember this, they have the Spectrum in Philadelphia had a rainbow wheel around the logo in center court, and they have that those colors up and down the side panel. So it's very nice. We've seen, you know, blurry images from design specs of, I think, half the teams that are doing it. Miami's mishmash one really looks like a ransom note. It's god awful.
Chase, it's basically imagine Cleveland's rock uniforms last year. But
with a few more colors thrown in for fun.
And get drunk.
Yeah. And you'll be happy to know, Chase, though, your Atlanta Hawks.
Mm.
You know what they're rocking.
What? Is it the big red hawk?
It is the big red hawk.
Yes.
Yellow uniform.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
It's tacky as hell.
Yes.
But I have a feeling you'll be seeing it at Coachella in about 15 years.
There you go.
Some guy who is trying to sell you ditch weed. So you got that to look forward to, assuming there's a Coachella in 15 years. But this has been your NBA uniform news update. I don't know what the Knicks one is, though, although we did get a little peek at the logo. It's going to have a lot of black for black's sake, because we were discussing before we hit record. So, awesome.
Bob, you know, I think we should replace the college football minute with us just kind of geeking out on NBA uniforms.
Yes, we should definitely have Mr. Blackwell's Fashion Corner, but for NBA uniforms.
Can we be, what was the show, In Living Color, you know, when they did the film review? Can we do that with uniforms?
Sure thing, man.
Hated it.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow. A lot of words were just said, and a lot of stuff was just talked about that I am not familiar with.
I for a while there, I haven't done it this year because the Knicks haven't really debuted a new uniform in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I would write extensive blogs for free on posting and toasting whenever the Knicks debuted a new uniform going into I have a vast storehold of Knicks uniform and generally NBA uniform knowledge. It is utterly, utterly useless for anything. It is certainly not monetizable at all. But, you know, if someone needs to check on something, I'm your guy.
There you go. Which brings us naturally to the NFL and the big-time veteran moves that were made this week. Andrew, Jalen Smith cut. Cowboys are paying him $7 million to not play football for them anymore this season. He's now a Packer. The Patriots get a six-round pick.
Oh, did the Packers sign him?
Yes, they did.
Damn.
And the Patriots trade Stephon Gilmore.
Floated a rumor they were going to cut him to gin up some interest. How unpatriot-like of them.
Well,
completely. Why did they get rid of him?
Well, he's on PUP, and he's
muscle memory.
He's over 30. Belichick doesn't like veterans on the backside. Like, he doesn't reward for
Gilmore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, that was something that he always does. But I just think that they missed the boat. Like, they probably should have traded him last year because they were in a gap year anyway. And they weren't really doing anything. I would have moved him last year when his value was still a lot higher, because now he's just been on PUP and he's owed a lot more money, and it's just no one was biting. So, I mean, at least they got a 6-round pick, but they could have gotten a lot more if they had traded him earlier than they did. But I don't know. I don't know what to expect from Gilmore, because most of the guys that Belichick does move on from in their 30s fall off a cliff. So, and people might point to Chandler Jones, but Chandler Jones was young. They moved off him young.
One.
Yeah.
Once Belichick gets rid of them, they don't move them. And then he brings them back like Kyle Van Noy.
Jamie Collins this week.
Did the Patriots re-sign Collins?
Oh, they signed?
Yes, they did.
Now that's just trolling.
Yeah, that really is. Well, one, it's trolling, and two, it's just kind of like, I can just only imagine, you know, the whole, okay, Matt Patricia brought one of his guys back in, and Belichick's like, yeah, you weren't happy with him, were you? It's kind of like a terrible relationship where he's just like, yeah, you really didn't like that guy, did you?
Cherokee Parks. There's another Maverick.
This is all Bob's going to be thinking about for the rest of the day.
You know, no, here's my thing. Like, I need this to be a gimmick for Bob. So basically it just turns into, it's kind of like, you know, when you're listening to a terrible mixtape and they're just having one too many drops. Bob just puts a remember some guys anytime we're talking about a team.
Ryan Hollins. There we go.
Desanya Jopp, who was an assistant coach somewhere I saw. I think maybe in Dallas, actually.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
How old would y'all think Bob Costas is without looking?
Oh, he's got to be like 66, 67.
No, he's older than that. No, Bob Costas was doing color commentary for the freaking ABA, man.
He's 69. He turned 70 next year.
Nice. I thought he was older. I really did. When he was out of college, he was. I know this because I wrote this story a couple of years ago about a player named Jumpin' Joe Caldwell, briefly an Atlanta Hawk, Thomas. A very good player for the Atlanta Hawks in the late 60s and early 70s. Briefly, Caldwell got blackballed or at least that's what he believes, and I kind of agree with him, by the ABA and the NBA, and he got screwed out of a pension he felt he was deserved. He spent decades fighting them both in court, even after the ABA went defunct. It was a cool story. I spoke to Joe Caldwell. I spoke to a lot of people. And I spoke to Bob Costas for it, because Bob Costas was the Spirits of St. Louis play-by-play guy in 1975.
That's wild.
Because so, he like got that job basically out of college. So that's why I was like, he's super, like, for as much as he's seen, like, I hate saying like he's in his 60s and he's young, but I was like, no, he's been doing this basically since he was looking like a 14-year-old.
But he still does. He is not aging at all. And that's the reason I bring that up. The reason Costas just popped up, because on the timeline, he's doing the broadcast for the postseason with like Buck Showalter and Roger Stone, it looks like.
Oh, are they doing the is that on MLB Network?
I'm not sure what they're on, but because someone quote tweeted and said the combined age of the booth is 216 years old, which is bonkers. Bonkers.
Scott Brooks, Jason Kidd, Derek Fisher. ABA and NBA coaches, former Mavs.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, and my favorite Bob Costas story is the John Gotti story.
John Gotti story?
Okay, so basically, Bob Costas was in New York, and Missouri was playing somebody. They were playing like Syracuse or something, preseason tournament. And so Bob Costas is there with Norm Stewart and all these, you know, Mizzou alums after the game at some famous Italian restaurant. John Gotti walks in and he's like, you know, basically at this point, John Gotti is the man. And one of the most notorious people on the face of the earth. And so he recognizes Bob Costas, and I don't know what happens before he leaves, but he recognizes Bob Costas and comes over to the table and is basically like, he asked Bob Costas a question, but it was one of those things where it was like, Bob Costas, like in any other setting, he would probably be like, no, I'm good. But it was, you know, it's John Gotti at an Italian restaurant in New York City. There are no other alternatives. You do what the man asks. And yeah, so basically it was just kind of like, yeah, John Gotti recognizes me. And and so like, I'll have to send you guys the clip, but Bob Costas tells the story and it's freaking hilarious. But yeah, just the fact that Bob Costas has that much clout And in terms of just, you know, when John Gotti wants to have a conversation with you, you have a conversation with John Gotti, no matter who you're with.
Sure. I agree with that.
I like it. Do you agree with Gary Post being the Zodiac killer?
No.
No. Well, the fact Cruz, that the Zodiac killer is a Vikings fan makes all the sense in the world now.
Ted Cruz is the Zodiac killer, not some guy named Gary Posty.
Please tell me you've seen the pictures of the dude on Facebook. They're like, yep, that's Gary.
Ted Cruz. No one denies this. Don't fake news us, Chase.
Come on. No, I'm laughing about the dude who is like, just like, yeah, that's old Gary. He's the Zodiac killer. And like, everybody on Facebook's like, no, he's not. Stop pushing out misinformation. And this was like 2018. And he's
I'm looking at it right now. Glenn Barnes. He said, my last visit with old man, Gary Posty, Zodiac question mark. God dang, I miss you, old man.
Oh man, like it's fantastic. Like dude's just like, yep, that's Gary. And everyone's like, no, it's no, it's not. He's like, I freaking told y'all. Oh man, and the look that he gives, like when Gary's just like staring straight, like basically knowing my luxury box in hell is waiting for me, and his friend is sitting there just looking at him like, oh, that's old Gares.
I don't know, Bob.
Your parents are gonna thoroughly enjoy this podcast, especially at this part where we talk about the Zodiac Killer's bestie.
I like they'll be listening to it on the way back from Knoxville because they're in town for the game this weekend, so they're already pretty
very
close.
Nice.
They will not hear it on the way in, but they will listen on the way out. So hi, mom and dad.
Okay. Hi, mom and dad. Thanks for listening to the pod.
Sorry, we went in depth about the Zodiac Killer's bestie or not. Yeah. If you laughed. Yeah.
But you're welcome for all the NBA uniform talk. I know that's why you guys tune in.
That is why they tune in. That's why they tune in. Bob, we can find you on Twitter.com at Bob Saietta. We can follow Andrew at Aham Free Press. Follow myself at Chase _Thomas. But yeah, great afternoon. This is one of our best pods, I think. I'm going to put this in the pantheon of the best sports reporters assemble spots.
Sounds good. I don't. Well, we'll see. We'll see if we can get a full Pitchfork review of it, and maybe hopefully it'll hold. Yeah.
There you go. I would give a kidney to either of these men on this podcast, but I would just like for them to publicly confirm that I gave said kidney, and you know, just do something nice.
We're not getting into kidney dialogue, man.
Can I post a picture of you saying that's old Gare? Even though your name is Chase, that's old Gare.
Nobody cares about the kidney story. Goddamn self-involved media people. Bad art friend. Oh, who's the bad art friend? Everyone is. Artists are freaking succubi. That's their job.
Bye, guys.
I'll see y'all later.
All right, you heard it. The Atlanta Sports Guys, we have returned because it is Friday afternoon. And you know what that means? That means that we're 24 hours, we're 24 hours away, rather, from the Michigan Wolverines trying to win another football game by not doing anything downfield, by just running up the middle.
I'm sorry. Wait. First of all, how do we start the Atlanta Sports Guys with the Michigan Wolverines?
I'm still really upset about the Joe Milton stuff that you had to put me through at the beginning of the season. Allowing him to come to Knoxville.
No, Tennessee put you through that, not him.
I blame Max, because Max was like, all offseason, y'all didn't hear this. This was off air, so there's no audio tapes to back this up. But all offseason, Max is like, look, he was in a bad system in Ann Arbor.
But one of the better things is
he gets in the SEC.
No.
He gets in Josh Heupel's program. He has this amazing deep ball. He's going to be able to fine tune it. He's not going to throw it out of Nealon. He's going to be able to hit the deep bomb. He's going to run. Some people are saying he has the same body type as Cam Newton. just buy in. Just wait. Just
stop
buy in.
I was just setting your expectations where they needed to be, which was he is not a good Power 5 quarterback. He's not reliable, and he won't be ever.
He could be a legend at Bowling Green, though. Like, that's where I think he needs to go. He needs to be like a group of five legend, where it's just he puts up these bonkers numbers. Like, do what Terry Wilson did. Go to the Lobos. Go to New Mexico. Go somewhere like that. Go to UTSA. They were undefeated, I believe, at this point still. But here,
do you rank UTSA?
Yeah. Wait, say that again.
Ooh. Would you rank UTSA?
I mean, they have a lot of good wins. Kevin Wilson's doing some good work. He's going to get a Power 5 job sooner rather than later. The Roadrunners.
Five teams.
Yeah.
Group of Five is having a pretty good year, honestly.
Coastal Carolina's Jamie Chadwell will be on this very program next Tuesday, working for a couple other big Power 5 coaches in the next few weeks. But exciting times. But that voice, I don't know if I introduced you yet or not, Garrett. Did I? I did Max, because I'm still upset about Max and what he did with the Michigan stuff. And thankfully, they're going to get stomped by Nebraska and Scott Frost on Saturday.
They are. So I told you this. Yeah, they're going to lose this week. They'll probably lose a few more games. Like I told you, they're going to lose last week. I'm just, pessimist.
Ooh, Michigan?
Yeah, Michigan.
Yeah, he's just setting them up. I mean, I don't know. Dogs have a pretty good game this week.
Okay, well, the Dogs
the good old War Eagle Tigers.
I mean, people aren't really talking about that. Everyone's talking about the Tennessee black uniforms. That's what the folks are talking about. Dark mode got put.
I didn't even know you guys were wearing black uniforms.
It was all over Twitter.com yesterday. Don't act like you didn't see that, Garrett. Like we rocked the internet. We shook the internet. Dark mode activated. Tennessee will be wearing black uniforms at noon against the vaunted Shane Beamer led South Carolina Gamecocks. People are wondering if South Carolina can walk into Neyland and steal a victory. No, the answer is no.
They still have the graduate assistant playing quarterback for him.
No, Zeb's on the bench. It's Luke Doty, who is rather bad.
He's not good. He's certainly not good.
No. Only one of the three of us. Only one of our teams actually has a reliable good quarterback. It's not Cade McNamara. It's not QB1 Stetson Bennett. It's Hendon Hooker.
All right, here's a stat for you.
Hendon Hooker's the guy I told you to start from the very beginning, man.
Mm-hmm.
I've been all aboard the Hendon Hooker train.
There are three Power 5 teams that have not trailed all year. Can you name them?
Three Power 5 teams that have not trailed all year? Well, I mean, two. Oh, I know what it is. Done. I'm going to nail this. Georgia, Bama, Iowa.
You got the conference right for the third one. You didn't get the
team. Oh, it's Penn State then.
The University of Michigan.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. Wait, who was Iowa trailing to?
Michigan. Yeah, Penn State trailed against Wisconsin.
Yeah, I was going to say, Penn State did, but like that's why I said Iowa first. Wait, who was Iowa trailing to?
I don't know. Iowa State, maybe? I don't know.
No, they jumped on Iowa State early.
Look it
now
up.
Now I want to look this up. I'm trying to figure out who Iowa was down to now.
Wisconsin, maybe?
They haven't played Wisconsin yet.
I love that we get on here every Friday and we filibuster the hell out of the depressing state of the Atlanta Falcons by just talking about college football that is completely unrelated.
Well, to be fair,
I mean it's easy to get excited about Georgia football, man.
It's not. I'm excited for when the Dogs come to Athens and we drop 35 on this overrated Georgia Bulldogs. People are saying. Calvin Ridley not traveling with the team to London. We have to talk about the Falcons first. Tajee Sharpe. There's a person named Kendall Doss who I think was a receiver at Ohio State years ago. That's where he sat. Like, that sounds right to me. Christian Blake, is he available? Like, who is going to lead
Zacchaeus?
Oh my goodness, is he going to lead the Falcons in targets on Sunday?
He's going to have like 12 targets.
We're not going to throw to Kyle Pitts, are we?
It's going to be a 3-catch, 24-yard game for Kyle Pitts. Like, we don't have any other receivers. How do you not even throw it to him?
That's Cordarrelle Patterson and Kyle Pitts. They'll lead us to the promised land. Cordarrelle Patterson's going to play running back, wide receiver. He'll be tight end. He'll also come in and play safety for us, too. So it's Cordarrelle Patterson we trust.
Well, speaking of, Isaiah Oliver lost for the season. Man, it's just everything's bad right now. Everything's bad. But with Calvin Ridley not traveling with the team to London, what do you think the Falcons' offensive game plan will look like against the Jets, Garrett?
I don't know. I mean, literally just throw the ball to Kyle Pitts. I mean, if anything, thank God this game is happening at 9:30 and we're playing the Jets, because no one's going to wake up for this game, first and foremost. Second off, it's the Jets. So, I mean, we're always going to have a chance at least because we're playing New York. But, God, I mean, this is just not a pretty game. Like, I don't think either team is really going to look all that good in this game. And maybe Mike Davis, we can put the ball in his hands. Maybe we can just throw underneath routes to Cordarrelle Patterson and Kyle Pitts, and maybe Zacchaeus can get up over the top or something. But, I mean, I really don't think it's going to be all that pretty. Tajae Sharpe, I don't know if Tajae Sharpe's actually played a game since, like, 2019 or something. Has he? It was for Tennessee. I think it was for Arthur Smith up in Tennessee. But
I thought he had a catch in week one.
Maybe did he?
I don't know. I
mean, who knows? I mean, this is just very frustrating. Hayden Hurst, Kyle Pitts, Cordarrelle Patterson, and Lamide Zacchaeus. That's who we've got, and that's what we've got to. That's what we got to roll with. Thank God we're playing the Jets, I guess. But I mean, it's going to be ugly.
I think it's going to be ugly, but I also just, you look at this secondary, their secondary is atrocious. Like, the Falcons, it stinks that Calvin Ridley's not going to be here, because I really think he would have a field day against Neesman, Guidry, Hall, Colbert.
He needed it too.
Yes. And Kyle, like, who's covering Kyle Pitts? Like, CJ Mosley can't cover. Quincy
Arthur
Williams
Smith is covering Kyle Pitts.
Who is?
Arthur Smith.
Oh.
I'm going to use that for later.
No, I can't go there yet. I think we should have a conversation about Calvin Ridley, though, because I don't think there's been like a shift. I don't know if you guys have noticed this or if I'm making it up. Just sort of a shift in Falcons fan sentiment toward Calvin Ridley, probably going back the last couple weeks, and just like him not having the start to the year that he expected and that we expected from him, and how much of that is his fault. There's like videos going around of him sort of shying away from contact and dropping passes. And it was sort of Arthur Smith made a comment in the post game presser, I think, or maybe it was the Monday presser, I'm not sure, saying that Calvin hasn't been like as good as they need him to be and like how they expect him to be. Really just like kind of calling him out. And it didn't get that much attention, but I'm trying to like see if this is putting two and two together here, and there's something more to this than we're making. We haven't heard why he's not going to London yet. It's just said personal reasons. And I'm wondering if there's some sort of riff going on here.
I've actually been seeing the same thing. His body language is just not positive.
I know. It's just, and he's,
there's something wrong.
It'll be like Matt Ryan will overthrow him, and he'll like be very obviously upset.
Throw his hand up in the air. Yeah.
We haven't seen that much of that from him since he was drafted, because he's been so dang productive. And there hasn't been a ton of reason for him to be frustrated. I mean, he's still third in the NFL in targets. So like they're looking for him a ton, but I just, you know, obviously I don't have any inside info here or anything like that. I'm sort of just putting two and two together. And I'm wondering if that is kind of what's going on. And I'm worried that that's what's going on.
I guess it's possible. We really don't know. It's still so early in the season. And like, I think we predict that it was going to be more likely that Matt Ryan would get upset about the losing and the opportunities before Ridley. Like, I don't know. Ridley is complicated, because I hadn't really considered what it would look like. But I mean, next year is not guaranteed, is it? Does he have his next year? Is 2022 guaranteed? His year 28 season?
Fifth year, isn't it?
I assume they picked up his fifth year option, right?
They already did.
This past off season, I believe they picked up his fifth year option. This is year four, so he'll be.
Yeah, so he doesn't get a signing bonus. There's like $11 million cap hit if they cut him next year. So I don't know how that works if you trade him. NFL trades are so much more complicated than NBA. And Major League Baseball, it's a lot more difficult to figure it out. But yeah, he's an unrestricted free agent after next year.
This offense has two pillars, basically. He's supposed to be one of them. And if you trade him, like what are we doing? Like what does that do? But this is the year where you just sort of assumed he would get his extension, and he and Kyle Pitts would build the offense around them going forward.
Are we convinced he wants to play here?
God.
I mean, maybe that's why he wants to. Obviously, I don't want to speculate, which that's exactly what I'm doing right now. But I mean, look, I mean, maybe that's part of the reason why he's shying away from contact. Maybe he's thinking about that contract. Maybe he's, I mean, obviously, this is just pure speculation, but it's like, the body language says he doesn't want to be here. The fact that he's shying away from contact says he doesn't want to, like, he doesn't really want to be here. I mean, like, I don't know. I just get that feeling. I've had that feeling every game I've watched him play. It's just, there's just something wrong with the situation. And now obviously he's got the personal reasons up for this game. And I mean, I expect that to come out eventually, like what's going on. I'm sure it will eventually, but I mean, he's a little older, isn't he? I mean, he's like what, 27, 28 now?
Yes.
So he's going to have one big major contract coming up, maybe one after that. But I mean, he's playing for that contract at this point.
Right. And let's say that's like a 4-year, 5-year extension, whatever, like that would get him to the age that Julio's at right now. Right.
Yeah. Except Julio had the 2 extensions because Julio was a little
right,
younger.
Right. And so you're right. It's like, this is his chance. And so we're speculating, like, you know, there could be a million reasons he's not going to London, mm-hmm. and this could all be sort of dumb speculation. But, you know, it's also possible he wanted that extension done already before the season. And for whatever reason, hasn't been done. I mean, he's tweeted about that in the past, about wanting, like, about being ready for an extension, like wanting to be in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And it's not done. And so, you know, maybe there's something there. Maybe he's thinking this should already be done. And why are they, you know, lowballing me? Or I don't know any of that. It's just not good, man. There's not good
vibes
around the Falcons.
Yeah, something is wrong. And I don't know what it is.
Hmm. I don't think Arthur Blank's going to come out and say Falcon for life with Calvin Ridley for any.
Please, God. I hope he never does that shit again. I love Arthur Blank. I love those players. But it's like, dude, for the love of God, never do that again.
Well, speaking of Cordero Patterson, would you like to guess where he ranks in PFF grade for all running backs who've got enough carries to qualify this season?
Oh my God.
If he's not number one, he's number one in our hearts, man.
I'm going to guess 7th.
What do you guess, Garrett?
Number one, man. Let's go.
Garrett's closer. He's number two.
Oh,
he's the number two halfback in the NFL. Yes, behind Derrick Henry.
That's unbelievable.
Give me Cordero Patterson.
Derrick Henry's on pace for like ever.
Touches for Cordero Patterson on Sunday.
I mean, Cordero Patterson, we were all in on Mike Davis, but Cordero Patterson, man, he's doing it all. I don't know. Like, I don't know what to expect on Sunday. I think they should win. They're favored by what, 2.5?
I got it at 3.5.
Dude, you're favored 2.5 against the Jets.
Man, this is going to be a sleepy one too. Are y'all waking up for this? Are y'all waking up at 9:30?
Yes, of course.
I have to, man. Okay. I have to because of the Falcons.
Garrett's flying to the game, dude.
Oh my God! No, if the Falcons were actually worth a half damn, then I would have thought about it. But it's like, dude, come on.
Garrett's entire travel itinerary is based on what Atlanta sports are doing. Like, he's like, I hadn't really considered New York City here, but the Hawks are
Milwaukee. Milwaukee's beautiful this time of year.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was actually just up in Milwaukee, and she loved it. So, I mean, maybe. They weren't playing it. What did they play at, like, 1 o'clock tomorrow or something like that? Mm. What did they play tomorrow?
Who?
The Braves.
Oh, I don't know. I think they're 1 o'clock on Monday. I don't know if
it's 1 o'clock Monday, yeah. And I'll be at the game on Tuesday.
Okay.
Whatever the least desirable time slot is, you can assume that that's probably where they are.
Braves fans were complaining about that, and I was just like,
we will always complain about
it. But like, that's reality. Like, this series, you got the Brewers. Like, that's how this works. There was all kinds of interest in Braves Dodgers last year, but it's the Brewers. Like, there's just like, you can talk up the Hank Aaron series, but like, there is just not a lot of interesting pieces. There's no Acuna. The Brewers have no interesting hitters whatsoever. Christian Yelich is not good anymore. Like, there's all kinds of reasons not to be, like, unless you're a big Josh Hader versus Will Smith and the bullpen guy, like, I don't know why a casual, like, why you would put them in a better slot than Giants Dodgers or like,
no, Dodgers West Coast time zone especially. I mean, like, that's gotta be the game, dude. I mean,
well, everyone wants that. They both won 100 plus games. Like, what are you complaining about? Like, that's clearly the better series. Like, it's not even worth a question. Like,
the 2 best teams in baseball, like, yeah, head and shoulders above everybody else right now.
Yeah, it's also just like a markets thing, you know. Mm. like those ratings are gonna be crazy for out, you know, the Giants Dodgers. Like, those two teams are much more. Yeah. I mean, the Dodgers especially, just in terms of like a national brand that garners like casual interest, like the Braves and Brewers don't do that.
Mm-hmm. What time are they actually playing the Giants and Dodgers? Let's see. Because knowing Major League Baseball, they're going to slate that game for like 10 o'clock Eastern time.
I'm not sure.
No one hates marketing the MLB more than the MLB.
Well, they're doing these games at
9:37 tonight. It is. Oh my god, they're incompetent.
That game's going to end at like 2:00 a.m. East Coast
they're
time.
They're so stupid. I'm sorry. Like, I have nothing good to say about Major League Baseball. Mm. Like, I'm sorry. You have 106 and 107 win baseball team, and you're removing an entire coast of the United States because you want to play it at 9:00. You're out of your mind, dude.
Why did they play these games at 5 and 9 instead of, like, you could just push the Braves game up an hour and play them at 4 and 8?
Like, Monday night, no one's going to stay up at 9:37 for first pitch. That's just so frustrating. I cannot believe that. Oh, Lord. They're dumb. No one hates the MLB more than the MLB. I hate Rob Manfred. I'm sorry.
Well, let's get Garrett a little bit happier.
I can go off on a tangent here.
Let's make him a little bit happier, Max. John Collins baptized somebody else this week.
He did.
John Collins. Going to be a great year from John Collins. Like, it's not going to be Cam Reddish breakout Paul George stuff, but it is. It's going to be pretty good. Pretty excited about John Collins this year. What have we learned, Max, from the Hawks thus far in the preseason? Do you have any new hot takes, or not even just hot takes, any new perspectives that you'd like to throw out about the Hawks as of right now?
I can't say I've been like locked into Hawks preseason, to be completely honest.
Okay.
We probably should talk about, Garrett brought it up off air, we should probably bring it on air, about DeAndre Hunter. And mentioned some knee soreness. That's not exactly two words you want combined in the preseason from a guy that is, I mean, it's a pivotal year for him. But I also think, I do think, and we can talk about that more specifically, I think that speaks to how this rotation is going to sort of sort itself out. And we've talked about that in the past, and we've been sort of stressed about, all right, how is Cam Reddish going to get minutes? Kevin Herter, Bogdanovich, Hunter, all these guys, like these wings that we know, and Jalen Johnson, we want to get him involved. This stuff works itself out. And I think, you know, if that, like, it speaks to the way that Schlenk has built this roster, that if DeAndre Hunter, who is like considered a pillar of this rebuild, was to be out for the year, like that wouldn't cripple this team. And in fact would open up possibilities. Obviously not saying it's a good thing, but that opens up breakout possibilities for Cam Reddish, like we're talking about. That opens up possible minutes for Jalen Johnson, which we all kind of want. It certainly opens up an opportunity for Kevin Herter in a big year for him. So, you know, that's worrisome. I would love to see a fully healthy DeAndre Hunter for a full year with this team, with this roster. But I think the depth stuff will figure itself out, and I'm excited to see all of that.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a really deep roster. I just want to see him healthy. I mean, it's kind of frustrating, and it's like, at what point do you trade him?
Well, before his knee, it gets to the point, because like the time is ticking, where it's like if he gets a year and a half of this being a thing, then the trade value is just different. Like, there comes a point where it's like, oh, we're just trying to get off this injury riddled guy, like the Chandler Parsons situation, right? Where you're just like, oh, this is just clearly never getting better. And I don't know.
But he's got so much more upside than a guy like Chandler Parsons. So that's the thing. It's like,
Chandler Parsons got a max deal.
I was going to say Chandler Parsons was a star.
That's never made sense to me, truth be told.
No, but Chandler Parsons, put some respect on Chandler Parsons before the injuries derailed him. That dude was a great, great basketball player in the prime of his career.
All right, I'll take a step back.
I think
I'm not going to die on that hill. That's not a moment.
Chase, you brought this up, and it's almost more important for the trade value, because I mean, we've talked forever about how the Hawks are going to get this next star, and you would think that either involves DeAndre Hunter or involves centering DeAndre Hunter in the future team that we want to win a championship. And so, like, yeah, this year is the difference between DeAndre Hunter being a potential, you know, 1B piece in a trade for a star, or DeAndre Hunter like wanting to get off of that deal for an injury riddled guy before we have to pay him. And like the difference between those two values is pretty massive.
Yeah, because right now he's still the guy with an extremely high ceiling. He could be a prime 3-and-D guy. Still, I mean, we took him with the third pick in the NBA draft. I mean, like, my God, the guy's got value just in and of itself. But yeah, Max, you nailed it. I mean, it's like, we have to hit this before it's too late. But the thing is, it's impossible to know when too late is too late and if too late will come. Because he still could be that guy. It's just at some point you got to push your chips in, and they got to do something. They got to move in some direction, because it's like, Chase, you've mentioned this a few times on this podcast, but it's like this team is so damn deep that it's almost too deep, where it's like where you're going to have so many guys, you're not going to get into a rhythm with too many guys. You need too many mouths to feed. I don't think we're necessarily at that point yet, but it's like we're getting dangerously close to it.
Yeah, I think so. Some positives that I will say from the preseason and having certain guys out is we're able to see some guys with expanded roles, like Dylan Wright. It's going to be good. I don't know how this affects Lou Williams, his season, but Dylan Wright looks good. I like what
Sharif
he brings.
Sharif Cooper's also looks pretty good too.
That man is not cracking the rotation whatsoever. No, like he's going to be a Skyhawk legend. Like, don't get me wrong, he's going to be must-see in College Park Skyhawks, but in terms of the actual NBA rotation, no.
I don't see Lou Williams getting any more than like 5 minutes a game, truthfully.
I don't know how he plays. Team. Like if Dylan Wright is who he needs to be, and Kevin Herter gets some responsibilities bringing the ball up, Cam Reddish does, Bogey does, like I don't know if you need to put Lou Williams in for anything. I don't know if he serves a purpose as like a fifth guy, fifth distributor.
I think Lou Williams is the guy who, like, you know, he'll be a DNP coach's decision, yes, for like two straight games, and then Trey will sit for whatever, mm-hmm, reason, and he'll play like 20 minutes and score like 12 points, and you'd be like, oh, like that was nice to have.
But yeah, like, that's not, like, should be his role. It's like when Trey needs to sit, he fills in.
Right. It's almost like it doesn't affect Dylan Wright at all to me. Like, mm-hmm, Dylan Wright's role is pretty set, and then Lou kind of fills in the gaps for scoring whenever that's needed for whatever reason. But in like a fully healthy playoff rotation, like if we play a playoff series tomorrow, I don't think he cracks that rotation.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do think also someone else I'd written down that I think is looking good is Jang. Like Gorgui Jang is going to be, that's going to be a really underrated signing. I think he's going to be really, really good for us. And my guy, who is never going to be bad, Dwayne Dedmon, still putting up great preseason numbers. I will, like, moving on from Dwayne Dedmon, I would have maxed him out when we had him. Like I would have given Dwayne Dedmon the max. That man is going to be a consistent rim running defensive 3-point assassin for years to come. That man is a delight. But Gorgui Jang also looking good. So I think with Capella hurt, Onyeka and Kongwu out for a while, I think Jang's going to play a lot of minutes, especially early on. And I don't think the Hawks are going to miss a beat. I think it's going to be a very different style with him and Collins getting a lot of minutes together. But I am curious to see how that works. And there's going to be so much room for Trey to drive and kick. And there's going to be a lot of pick and pops with these guys. I'm very curious to see how Jang and Collins, what the numbers look like with those two on the floor for extended minutes, because I think that is going to be what happens there. We'll wrap up with the Braves, Milwaukee. We've talked about this series. Braves go into it on the road in Milwaukee. The matchup to watch is what, Garrett?
It's the Braves pitching, or excuse me, the Braves lineup versus the Brewers pitching. I mean, it has to be, right? You've got a fantastic rotation for the Brewers, a fantastic bullpen. Yes, they lost Devin Williams, the setup guy, but at the same time, Josh Hader, great closer. You have a potential Cy Young candidate at the front end who, weirdly enough, is less than a year older than I am. It's super weird to still see that kind of thing. But no, I mean, this Braves lineup is super deep. Which is credit to Alex Anthopoulos, because that really came out of nowhere these last 2 months with all those trade acquisitions. But at the same time, it's going to be put to the test. And I mean, if these guys can stay hot and jump on some of these on these pitchers, and I mean, it's a tough rotation. But I mean, it's October baseball. Pitching wins games. I mean, it's going to be a tough series. It's going to be a really tough series. But if these bats can stay hot, I like the Braves' chances. But they have to win game one.
Why do they have to win game one?
No, it's a 5-game series. I mean, I firmly believe it's like game one is almost always the most pivotal game for me, because it's like that sets everything up. You have Charlie Morton versus I'm blanking on his name.
Corbin Burns.
Yeah, it's Corbin, right? Yeah.
So I mean, we got that line the first game. I want to see what they can do. And it's the momentum game. You can take home field advantage. Game one is always just super pivotal for me. Just mentally.
Yeah, I think it's more like, the way I look at it is the Braves have to win one of the first two, which is seems obvious. Like in a 5-game series, you have to win one of the first two, but you have to beat Burns or Woodruff. And I think either of those games is gettable. Like I feel like having Charlie Morton in there is a pretty big asset, and Max Fried in game two. And it's like those guys have, I wouldn't want to say they're as good as Burns and Woodruff, but like in the second half, I think they've sort of gone head to head. And so if you get one of those games, and you know, then it's a series. But I think it's the kind of series where it's like, this is probably going five. I hate five game series for this reason. It's like,
yeah,
if the first two games go the wrong way, it's over. But I think I do have, I've been leaning more and more toward the Braves winning this series. And I think that the power in the lineup is probably the main reason.
I just don't want Dodgers Braves again. I don't know if I can handle this back to back years.
I don't want to play the Dodgers.
Because they're not beating the Dodgers in a seven game series. Like, that's not.
No, they're not beating the Giants either. But it's like, if they win this series, right? I mean, just getting to the playoffs.
Getting to the NLCS back to back years is going to be very frustrating, because I think this has been a good team. And if Acuna was here, we'd have a different conversation. Because I think this team is so good outside of Acuna being gone. It's just that, like, getting so much out of Jorge Soler, we don't know what Freddie Freeman's situation will be this winter. We don't know. Travis d'Arnaud's health next year. We don't know what the rotation's going to look like with Soroka. We don't know if Max Fried the second half is going to stay, because he's just been so dominant there. Does Ian Anderson keep it up? Does Will Smith blow up next year? Does Adam Duvall come back? Do we get an NLDL?
What you have. You're in this situation because you've won enough game. I mean, this is one of the hottest teams in baseball going back to the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I went back, did the math. Like, win percentage-wise, this is a 106-win team. If like you extrapolate that over the course of 162 games, obviously it doesn't work that way.
Trade Acuna. That's clearly been the issue here. We got to move on.
I can't.
Ewing theory, anyone?
This team plays well. I mean, they've gotten healthy and they got hot.
It's kind of Hawks-ish the way they played in the second half. And they were on like a 59 win pace, I think, after Lloyd Pierce was fired.
Yeah.
But none of us were like, oh, the Hawks are like the second best team in the East or the best team in the East until they proved it in the playoffs. And I think that there's a possibility there, but then it's like, it's a little different than that, where it's like, okay, are they really going to beat the Dodgers in a seven game series? I feel like that's not going to happen.
We're all 0-0 right now. I know it's
right.
Wordplay.
But it's like, at that point, like we have to just believe that the Braves are what they've shown them to be in the second half, and which is a serious contender here. And like, maybe I don't want to say they're the favorite in this Brewers series, but it's not like the Brewers are substantially better.
What is the better? No, I mean,
we got the better end of the spectrum.
I think we're the second worst odds of winning the World Series. I remember seeing that, like, we're the second worst. I think the only team that had lower World Series odds was the Cardinals, and they got eliminated.
I mean, that's just because we had to run through the Dodgers and the Giants.
Mm. And then potentially the Rays or the Astros.
I'm just talking like purely National League. I mean, I'm not even going to focus on the American League until we get even remotely close to it. But I mean, that's the thing. I'm not ready to count the Braves out of this series. Not yet.
What's your official prediction?
What they can do tonight. Say what?
What's your official prediction?
I think the Braves win this series. I really do. I just think that the power hitting, the lineup is going to come through. And playoff experience speaks loudly. And I think the Braves kill the Brewers when it comes to deep playoff run experience and like winning games when it counts. And I think that matters. I think the Braves win. I want to say four, but I'm going to go five. Braves in five.
Max, what about you?
Yeah, I was going to say Braves in five, too. The complicating factor is that game five is on the road, which, you know, that's always the case. But I think this is what you're talking about, Garrett, with the experience. Like, I don't think this is a team that goes on the road for an elimination game and is, like, cowering in fear. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a toss-up, but I think with the way the Braves are playing, like, I more and more believe they're going to win this series.
I think the Braves win it too. I'm going to say Braves in four.
Well, I want to check this real quick. I want to check and see what our record is. Yeah, we actually have a better away record than we do a home record. By four games, so not all that much.
Well, part of that is just when you have to leave the city of Atlanta to go play your home games. That pays a toll.
I'm not going to justify that with a response. So. We can move on. You could throw a rock and hit the city limits. My God.
unless you're Thor, I don't know what kind of rock throwing you're doing here.
Hey man, unless you're I got a cannon. Put me in right field.
I've always said downtown Atlanta, Kennesaw State University. They're one and the same.
Bro, Kennesaw. Oh God.
It's too easy, Max. It's too easy. We can find Garrett on Twitter at GChapATL. We can find Max Markovich, who has not tweeted this fall semester, at Max_Markovich. He's away.
We'll get back in the game.
How has that been? It's probably been pretty nice to be away from social media for the most part.
Really nice. But I'm too tempted to come back, so it'll happen.
Okay. I'm going to bet when the Hawks season starts back. That's when we see Max back.
Well, you know, latter half of this Michigan season will be way too tempting. So we'll be back. Garrett, I have to ask you before we go. I've bet against Georgia way too much this year. Are they going to cover this weekend?
Yeah, they'll cover. I mean, they've allowed 0.26 points per drive, I think. Like, the defense is too much. Bo Nix is going to throw a pick or two. It's going to be interesting, though. They actually haven't played well. The last two times they've played at Jordan-Hare Stadium, they haven't really played all that well. They had the shellacking in 2017, and then 2019 they had the 21-14 game where they kind of just fell asleep in the fourth quarter. But this does appear to be a different Georgia team that's covered in all. I think they're 4-1 against the spread, I believe. So they're playing pretty good football right now. Auburn's coming off a very emotional win last week. I can see a bit of a letdown game in a game that you don't want to have a letdown game in. So Tank Bigsby's also kind of banged up. I think Georgia covers, but I mean, what is it, like 16 points?
I think it's 15 or 16, I saw.
15, 16. If it jumps over 20, which it won't, obviously, to get that high. But I think Georgia covers this game. I wouldn't be surprised.
All right.
I'll say that on the record, too.
Okay. I have
Auburn
covering.
I also went on record and said they beat Arkansas by 28 points, and I was pretty damn close on that one.
I think Auburn's a little bit better than Arkansas, but I could be wrong.
I don't know.
We'll
fundamental
see.
Fundamental football. Arkansas is one of the best in the country at fundamental football, just wrapping up tackling and running the football effectively. But that's exactly what running the football just runs right into what Georgia wants to do. And that's the same thing Auburn does. And Bo Nix, TJ Finley, whoever's playing quarterback, I don't know if they're going to have time in the pocket. If they get down, it's going to get ugly. But I mean, Auburn's a good football team. I think they can hang with Georgia for a little bit. But I think the talent discrepancy is just too much.
Okay. All right. Well, Max, we got to get off this call because Garrett's got a flight to catch to Milwaukee.
I got to get up to London. I got to get to Milwaukee and then flip around and get to London.
London connecting through Milwaukee.
That sounds like a drag.
I have a 2-day layover up there.
Oh my goodness. That sounds awful. All right, guys. Well, thank you as always. It's always great talking Atlanta Sports with you guys. Make sure to follow the good folks over there on Twitter.com. Leave us a 5-star rating and review if you like listening to just the premier Atlanta Sports Guy coverage in the city of Atlanta. Guys, I will talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com